she made it seem normal for me and other girls like me that the Prime Minister was a woman.
It's how people carry themselves, how they move, how they interact with other human beings, what it is about them. There's this fire and an energy.
As long as you believe that you can, don't let anyone else tell you that you can't.
Hello, I'm Mommy Imperfect, aka Rina Dipti Annabelle, and I would like to warmly welcome you to the Sisterhood of Mommy Imperfect, the podcast that celebrates and delves deep into all things womanhood and motherhood. And obviously, because I'm a South Asian woman, I'm a mom of three mixed race girls who are Indian and Ghanaian, so I'm bringing all that flavour into it as well. So thank you for tuning in, and if this is your first time listening, then welcome to the sisterhood. Jiya anu perne, swagatam. So stick with me, it's going to be good. Now, I've been looking forward to this episode all week because my guest and I are going to be talking about feminist icons. And by that, I mean completely badass women who own feminism and prove that in what is sadly sometimes still a man's world, but these women don't let anyone stand in their way. They shatter glass ceilings and they inspire other women to do the same. And the reason I wanted to talk about this week is because last week, Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg in the States passed away. Now, like me, you may have heard her name before and kind of vaguely known who she was. But like me also, you might have read some recent news articles about her and discovered what a legend she actually was. And that's why I wanted to talk a little bit about her and other fierce females that have made and are making history. Now, let me introduce my guest for this episode, who is a fierce female in her own right. It is artistic director of Punjab Arts, radio presenter, media extraordinaire, someone who I've known for over 20 years now, Har Girith Asi, or just Girith. Hi, Girith.
Hi, you okay? Thank you for having me.
That's all right. Now, I've wanted to get you on for a while now. Are you doing all right?
I'm doing okay, except for this non-COVID cold, but I think I'm okay.
Cool.
I think I'm okay, surviving.
So, I gave you a bit of homework this week, didn't I? So first of all, to have a think about feminist icons, because, you know, I wanted this to be like a considered list, not just reel off names like Beyonce, like even though she is a feminist icon, but you know what I mean? So let's, you know, I wanted us to think about it a little bit. And also because I wanted to talk to you about a film that I watched the other night and was equally in awe of and disturbed by. And the film I'm talking about is Dolly Kitty Aur Woh Chamakte Sitare. And it's a new film that's just been added to Netflix. It's written and directed by Alankrita Srivastava, who directed Lipstick Under My Burqa. And both films deal with female desires and also, you know, acting on those desires in a conservative middle-class India. So it stars Bhumi Pednekar, who's a great actress, and Konkana Sen Sharma, who's also brilliant. They are in the lead roles. And so, Girith, tell me, what did you think of it, first of all?
I enjoyed the film. And I don't know, so I spoke to you about it before. And you know, I wanted to make my own mind up, and I've watched it. And it was an interesting watch. Did they break any glass ceilings, really? There was a nod to a breaking a glass ceiling somewhere towards the end where that, without giving too much of the story away, because I think people should go and should download and watch this film, but I don't think they achieved anything except for recognizing they had more to offer society than they were being allowed to. And that was the interesting contrast between the two female lead characters. One knew she had more to offer and she was going out to get it, but then she knew she needed the support of the male society around her, which she gave into at the end, whereas the other one, she had to do what she had to do secretly and was kind of trapped, but and now, was yearning.
For people who are like, what the hell are they on about? Like, just without giving anything away. So basically, it's these two women, Kitty and Dolly, who are cousins. And, you know, they're living in Greater Noida, which is just like a suburb, big, massive suburb outside of Delhi. And then Dolly is a kind of housewife. She works as well, but, you know, not really a career woman. Got two kids, kind of stuck in a very drab
middle class life,
middle class of, yeah. drab kind of lifestyle. Like spending money to feel good about herself, doesn't really have much connection with her husband. And then the other one, Gajal, who then becomes known as Kitty, she's escaped a marriage that she didn't want to be in, or something, or she didn't want to get married to somebody, so she's been staying
engagement,
with
engagement, yeah.
Yeah, so she's staying with her cousin and ends up working for she works for a shoe factory and ends up walking out of there and working for this, I don't think this is giving too much away, but it's an app where lonely in quotation mark men phone up and have a bit of a romantic
have an
fantasy
ego
talk
boost.
When I say lonely men, some of them really shouldn't be lonely because they're actually married, so yes,
it's just a nice little ego boost for them, basically, to make them feel good about themselves and feel all powerful, and the fact that they're paying to be on the app.
Yeah, I know. And the thing is, like, I kind of, it's a good film, right? And I think that the performances were amazing, but I felt like it was so real because, like, you know, I've been to India so many times and I feel like I know people like this, like everybody in there, you know, like I've seen people like that and I can, it's one of those which is like too real. Like, you know, this is the life that a lot of people are living, and it kind of made me like, I don't know, feel a bit heavy-hearted and hate men in a way.
Yeah, I kind of hear what you're saying, but the thing is, I've not been to India, but I can still understand it because it still happens here. And there is that kind of protection, well, this is what you're supposed to do, just accept that this is what it's going to be and this is how you've got to do things. And the thing is, I even find it with myself because I'm still single and I find it with myself when people say, well, you've got to, you know, compromise. Well, the thing is, the guy's got to compromise too. Every relationship's a compromise. Doesn't matter whether it's business, whether it's personal. Every relationship's a compromise. And you've got to compromise equally, give and take equally. Both have got to be willing to do that. But here, the compromises are so big, so great, and the pressure is so much that the women just feel like, even if they go out to get what they want, they make all that noise, do whatever, they end up still having to get that tick from men to be allowed to do what they want to do. If they break that glass ceiling, it's because of a man that's allowed them to do.
And
that's what happens at the end of this film. And I get it with myself where it's, and you have to compromise, you've got to do that. And I am like fierce in what I stand for, which is probably why I'm still single. But I don't have an issue with that. I'm quite happy being myself, but what I have an issue with is I'm quite traditional in my values in some of them, but traditional doesn't mean I give in to the values that I don't like, which is the sort of the male having to needing male acceptance to be of someone of worth.
Do you know what? This traditional thing, right? Tradition and culture, these are thrown in our faces a lot, right? As women, like, oh, you know, you don't care about your culture. Oh, no, she's just washed out. She doesn't care about our culture. And these are our traditions. But at the end of the day, sati was traditional, right? That's outlawed. Dowry was traditional and it's outlawed. I know some people are still doing it. But
still doing it.
That's what I'm saying. Not every tradition and cultural practice is good. FGM. People are trying to, you know, do away with that. That's horrific. So not every tradition is good and we don't have to adhere to every single thing.
And I think women can be our own worst enemy in our own society where we allow those things to carry on. And I often have this argument with my own mum that if you treat me differently to my brothers, you're not changing anything.
No, but this is where the problem is. Like, I have literally, this makes me so angry that being a mom of three girls, some people will say to me, oh my gosh, you know, you've got three girls, I feel sorry for you. It's a really horrible world out there for girls, isn't it? And I'm like, you're the mom of boys. Why don't you raise your sons to have some respect for women? And that's a few less idiots for my kids to worry
about.
It's like,
exactly.
Well, what do you know? We are the people that can raise our kids to have some respect and some sense in their heads. if you keep thinking, oh, it's a really crap world for girls, isn't it? Boys can do what they want. Even in the Western society, boys will be boys. How many times have you heard boys will be boys?
Yeah.
And that's
got to be the change.
Boys, it will be boys, lets boys off the hook for a lot of stuff. Oh, you know, just messing around with all these girls. Boys will be boys. No.
But then I've had it in... boys will be boys, but I've had it so many times where, like, I've been in meetings and I've been a female. And because I wouldn't say I'm the biggest person in the room. I'm not tall or anything like that. But I've had meetings where I'm in, you know, quite high up. Lots of people in a meeting. And an Asian male in the room who's slightly older than me has left the room, shaken everybody's hand, apologised for having to leave late and come to me and then patted me on the head.
What?
Yes.
That is so rude.
And he left the room and everybody just looked at me as in, like, did that just happen? We've got to change that. I had to go back to him and say, can you please never, ever do that to me again? You might be Asian. I don't know what. You might be older than me. Mm. I had to confront that person to stop that behaviour, and we've got to stop it. It's not cute. It's not okay. It's just not okay.
But this is quite difficult sometimes to actually stand up and be like, excuse me, uncle, can you not do that? Do you know what I mean? Or whoever it is, because you're kind of rocking the boat, aren't you? And then you might be seen as that person who doesn't know how to respect people. But at the end of the day, it's like, if we don't, things like that are going to carry on.
But then you just touched on a really good thing there when you said uncle. The fact that we call people that we don't know uncle and auntie already puts us in our place. So what I found really refreshing, and I found this, I don't know if you remember when I used to work in Hackney, I did my placement in Hackney, and my manager was a Singh Sardar.
Mm-hmm.
And I could not call him by his name. I wanted to call him uncle. He's my dad's age. And I just wanted to call him uncle all the time. And he sat me down in his office and he said, you have to call me. His name was Bal. You have to call me Bal. And I was like, I'd just rather call you nothing than call you.
Can I call you Mr. Bal, G?
It was really, really difficult for me. But by the end of the year, I got used to it. But the other good thing I did was in 2004, when I joined the radio station that I worked for, it was quite forward thinking. And nobody there was allowed to call each other uncle or auntie for that very reason. So
really? Well, that is quite progressive, because it is a Punjabi radio station, isn't it?
Exactly. It was very progressive, and I thought, wow. And it does empower you to speak to somebody on equal footing. So the manager there, he's now, I think he's now 80 or so. But he was a lot older than me. Now I was a young 20-year-old then, 20-something-year-old then. But it's empowered me to be able to speak to him on a level where I've been like, why have you done this? Or, you know, why? You're not thinking, oh, I can't speak to you like that because you're my uncle.
Yes. Yeah. You know what? I didn't actually think about it like that, because I'm one of those people who's like, no, we have to say uncle and auntie. I'm not going to be like, you know.
In a social context, I might do. But in a work context, no.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You're right. In a work context, why are we doing it? Because you're there as colleagues, right?
Exactly. So, yeah.
That is a really
good
point.
That's really something that we take as respectful in our society is also something that doesn't help us progress.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's good. But I like this whole idea of, you know, standing up for yourself and kind of just shaking things up a little bit. But girls standing up and not taking any shit is obviously easier said than done when you're poor and being forced into a loveless marriage by your parents in India and other countries like that. So anyway, this is why it is even more important that we're talking about feminist icons, because there's a long way to go. And these feminist icons that inspire us to be strong, to be boss ladies. First of all, let's talk for a minute about Ruth Bader Ginsburg, or the notorious RBG.
RBG.
I love that. She became affectionately known as that. So she was a really big deal in America. And
yeah.
So she died last week at the age of 87. Now, did you know much about her, Kiddeth?
I knew a little bit about her. I have somebody who is a massive fan of hers, and I've always been following her as she's sort of posted about her in the past. So yes, because that woman I follow on the socials is quite a strong South Asian feminist in the US, and she's inspired by her. So I had a
cool
kind of an insight.
Mm-hmm. So for people that are not aware, that she was the second woman to serve on the Supreme Court in America. Mm. The Supreme Court is the highest court in the United States, and it rules on all the issues that make up the social fabric of America, whether it's issues of immigration or same-sex marriage. So those issues really affect people's lives. And Ruth Bader Ginsburg was a pioneer in pushing down those boundaries. And she was on the Supreme Court for 27 years. Like, she was a mom of two. She had a very supportive husband, by the sound of it. She faced some sexism in her life too. Like, she managed to get a teaching job at Rutgers School of Law in 1963. And she hid her pregnancy for quite some time under her mother-in-law's baggy clothes until her contract was renewed. Because I think it was quite normal then to be like, you're pregnant, bye, you know.
Bye, yes, exactly. Absolutely. But then she also had the issue about her pay, because she was married and her husband was in a decent job. She was told she'd get paid less. And she had to accept it.
Oh, man. Okay. So a lot
of... So you can see where a lot of her work stems from. It's exactly. Personal experience.
Definitely. Now, these are some RBG quotes, right? My mother told me to be a lady. And for her, that meant be your own person, be independent. I love that. And one thing that I say to my kids is... Because, you know, when they see me, like, putting on makeup or lipstick or something like that, they're like, oh, can I do that? I'm like, you can do it when you're a lady. And they were like... Oh, okay, when I'm a lady, I'm like, do you know what it means to be a lady? It means you've got to get all your education sorted. You know, you've got to get your own house.
I love it.
Learn how to drive, learn how to, like, you know, do all the things you need to do, then you'll be a lady. So I'm with her on that. And then another one is, women will only have true equality when men share with them the responsibility of bringing up the next generation. Which is so true. And this is one of the things I'll probably come back to a bit later. But in my opinion, having kids is something that only women can do, giving birth to them, you know. And you have to take time out of your career for that. And that has a big impact on what you can achieve professionally. And like, I don't want to say, oh, you can't be a feminist icon if you haven't got a professional career, if all you've done is raise children, because that is so not what I'm talking about. You know, you can indeed be a feminist and a feminist icon if what you're doing is... pouring love, knowledge, learning into your children. You know what I mean? This is a future generation, and what you're teaching them, how to overcome barriers, and it's so you can, I believe. But anyway, it's one of the things that we have to consider, which men obviously don't because of biology. So,
well, I think things are changing. Men are beginning to consider it. They're beginning to realise how much they miss out on the formative years of their young children when they don't play a part.
Mm.
I think so. I mean, there is a long way to go, but I think those things are changing slowly.
Yeah.
Not quick enough, but slowly they are changing.
So next, I want to just, I threw out the question, right, to the sisterhood, who do you regard as a feminist icon? And I'm going to reel off some names in a minute, right? But first, I just wanted to ask you, what does feminism mean to you?
Feminism to me means equality. It doesn't mean women stronger than men, just equality, equal treatment of both. And I do strongly believe that the pendulum has to swing the other way before it settles in the middle. For people to realise, you have to shine the light on women for people to realise that they are just as capable and sometimes even more capable than men of carrying out certain tasks, certain jobs, before it eventually settles in the middle. That is equality. So feminism doesn't mean to me that I hate men.
No, I think that's where some men get it wrong, because they're like, feminist, oh God, she's a feminist. You know, she must have just let all her body hair grow, which we spoke about last week, which is very interesting. If you want to listen to that, listen to last week's podcast. But, you know, oh, she's just like, lets her moustache grow, shaves her head and hates men. No, that is not
feminist. That's definitely not feminism. And I think especially in other cultures, feminism is seen as very... stereotypical feminist, like we're all suffragettes or we're all some kind, you know, that what you've just described. For me, it's definitely not that. And I'm a strong advocate of just as many as there are bad men, there's equally bad women as well. Yeah. So it's about finding that right balance, finding the right balance between men and women. For me, you have to understand that men and women are different. We're not the same. And that's the other thing that worries me sometimes about feminism. We're equal as people, like all humans are equal, but every single one of us are different to each other. We all have our own strengths and weaknesses. And it's kind of not making gender the issue.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think some people, like when I say men and women are different, like you know, and it's not an excuse to kind of think, okay, you're a woman, you've got to do this, you know, you've got to be at home. It's like we do different things and we are different, but we are of equal value. And I think that's what it is really, right? Feminism.
Yeah, well, as individuals, we're the same. So me and another woman, me and another man, me and another, you know, somebody who identifies as binary, we're all equal.
Mm.
But we're all different too. For more than just what our sex is or our gender is. So
if you look up the definition of feminism, it's, you know, it's a social movement and an ideology that fights for the political, economic and social rights for women. So it's a gender neutral term, and men can be feminists too. So I asked my husband last night, I was like, would you say you're a feminist? You know, seeing as we got three girls, you're surrounded by women. And he's like, what does that mean? And I told him, and his reply was, well, everybody should be that. I'm just a normal person, you know. But the thing is, like you said, that's all right to say I'm a normal person, everyone should think that, but they obviously don't. And like you said, the pendulum has to swing the other way. So I think we really have to push it. And that doesn't mean you hate men.
No, it definitely doesn't mean you hate men. It doesn't mean that you're not going to give men fair chances. It's just the women need the opportunities to come forward. If you're not going to give them the opportunities to come forward and show that we can do stuff, you're not going to be treated equally, because it's going to be assumed that women can't do that stuff if we don't get that foot in the door.
Also with feminists, I think that feminists, as well as empowering themselves, should empower each other, because you honestly believe in empowering women and furthering that, because, you know, let's face it, some women are tearing each other down.
I was going to say exactly the same thing. What you've just said, you hit the nail on the head, because it's very easy to say we should be helping each other and we're all feminists and we need to be doing that. But women are some of the worst people when it comes to supporting another woman. But then I do think sometimes it's also because it's so hard to get ahead that you're fighting for those few token places.
Yeah, there's that feel like, but I need to be the only one. Because, you know, there's only room for one. There's only room for one. There's only one box that has been ticked now with me. So stay back.
Yeah. There is that. And it's that kind of a threat to that, rather than pulling down the ladder and helping other women up. I think more of that needs doing. And I mean, there are women, there are great women out there, like RVG, who do that. Women are sometimes their own worst enemy when it comes to things like that. I mean, just watch The Apprentice and you can see it. Every time you have a group of women together, you know, it's like, is there going to be loads of, you know, cattiness and infighting? And sometimes it's absolutely awful when you watch them. You just think, oh, you're a bad, you know, you're showing women in such a bad light, you women. Just perk up and, you know, buck up your ideas and behave and show them how it's done. And it just gives, you know, it just shows how you can't put a group of women together to work together, is what they're telling us.
Yeah, but that shouldn't be the case. Yeah, exactly.
So
that shouldn't be the case. Like, I honestly believe that we just need to start lifting each other up and not tearing each other down. And, you know, that is what this podcast is about as well. Lifting other women up.
Yeah, lifting other women up, but it's also about, I think you find it in other cultures as well, where you have only a few people, like minorities. If a few of those minorities have made it, they can't help others, because again, they're a tick in the box and they've filled that quota, and it's a competition to meet that quota, rather than it just be literally you be judged on your ability or your, you know, just on yourself.
Yeah.
Rather than whether you're male, female, brown, black, whatever you are.
Mm. I mean, just talking about this just makes me realise there's a lot to be done, right?
Absolutely.
So you can stop thinking like that.
Every conversation we're having, it's ticking. Yeah, yeah, it makes your mind want to tick.
Okay, so I'm just going to play you a voice note now. This is singer and songwriter Tony Sansara, who was a guest on my podcast a few weeks ago where we spoke about Cardi B and Megan Thee Stallion's WAP. So she left me a voice note about what feminism means to her and who her feminist icon is.
For me, I feel like icon is something you evolve into. It's how people carry themselves, how they move, how they interact with other human beings, what it is about them. There's this fire and an energy, but calm as water at the same time. It's such a strange aura to try and describe. For me, I feel like the icons that I look up to seem to have taken a field or, you know, an arena, into the arena of being, I don't know, musicians, politicians, models, or, you know, TV presenters, judges, things like that. But through what they do, they've shown that there's versatility in who they are. Like, it's multi-layered. It's not just, oh, they're an icon because they're a singer. But generally, it's deeper than what people may have expected at the beginning or thought that it would get to. So one of these icons for me is Rihanna. I've always loved her from the beginning. I love that, just her style, the way she was, is, her aura. And I love the fact that while she is this, she hasn't forgotten the roots of her being a Bajan girl coming from a small island and, you know, going to another level of, you know, being known worldwide. And at the same time, she has ventured into other areas that empower women. So, like, she was one of the first brand founders to, you know, make a big range for different skin types, skin tones rather, and, you know, just champion every woman. Whereas, and in her underwear line and her clothing line, she's been very, you know, forefront about having different size models in her catwalks and things like that. And I just think that she represents every woman in the way that she is. And then there's also the stuff that she does educationally. She puts money back into the community. You know, she's helping out people that are less privileged than her. And she doesn't take it for granted. She's still quite, you know, humble, and she understands what comes with her stature within society. And for me, that is iconic.
Okay, so that was Tony. Mm-hmm. And why she thinks Rihanna is a feminist icon. So what do you think about the reasons that she likes her and looks up to her?
I think everyone who chooses a feminist icon, or I prefer to use the word role model than icon. It depends on their own personal circumstances as well and their own journey. And I think that her being an artist isn't a coincidence with who she's chosen as a feminist icon, right? You tend to look up to people in your own field of work first because they've been successful at what you're trying to do. But the reasons she's given, absolutely valid, though if those are the points that matter to her as a woman... And Rihanna has taken those forward and done something about those, then of course, you know, it stands as justified that she would see Rihanna as a feminist icon. And I can see absolutely why, because Rihanna is a strong woman. She's gone out there, done what she needs to do. She doesn't care what people say, do, think. And she's made sure there's, you know, like she's saying, the lines out there are there, that, like the makeup lines and everything that she does with her work. She makes sure that she's giving people what she didn't have access to, whether it be makeup, whether it be education, whether it be, you know, helping people with her charitable work, whether it be helping people of her background. as well. So that I think you can see why she holds her as a role model. Mm-hmm. And I think that's going to be a pattern that we see when we hear from others as well.
So these are some of the names that came up, right, when I was just having random discussions and in the group chats and stuff with other friends. So Michelle Obama.
Yeah, that's one. I'd expect that, came up. Yeah.
Yes. Beyonce.
Yes, I would expect that.
And it's like, and even with Beyonce as well, like, I feel like we don't, like, on a personal kind of level, I feel like you can't really get much from her. Do you know what I mean? She seems quite like there's a war, but she is kind of like a machine of like producing amazing work, and you know the stuff that she kind of talks about in her music as well is very female empowering, which is amazing. And like she said, you know, she's had the babies and got back to business, as she said in her one of her tracks. So I you know.
Yeah, you can't not admire that, right? But then at the same time, with the wealth that she's got, it's a lot easier than she has it a lot easier than many other people as well. So again, you're gonna, there's loads of things to argue, but as a role model, as for what she stands for, definitely, yes. If she's being an independent woman.
I know women that will say in any hard situation, oh my God, this is so stressful. What would Beyonce do? What would Beyonce do? Like,
exactly. No,
that's
I hear
what
you.
They think.
Yeah, which is good, because that's what she's making. She's allowing people to believe that you can do something, and that you can't knock that. You can't knock that. But you know, but with so many of these women, and RBG, I think, was a little bit special in a different. Like, she's in a different league.
Yeah,
she was before things like social media and whatever, and the profession that she was. I mean, it was public, but she didn't choose to be public. She was doing it for a reason. But Beyonce, she's extremely talented. You can't knock her talent. You can't knock her work ethic, her drive. Yeah, because of that, she is a powerful, independent woman. But she's also married a powerful man as well.
But then I think she could have married anyone, and she could be. I mean, I know they're a power couple, but
they
still,
they are,
you know,
a power,
I mean?
Couple, yeah. But they, again, they are a power couple. I'm not taking that away from her, but she's with a powerful man, and that gives her all the more power.
Yeah, and I mean, that's why you get certain people who stay as a power couple, even though it's obviously a dead carcass of a marriage that's going on.
Yeah,
I'm just gonna say Will Smith and Jada Pinkett and leave that there. I'm gonna leave that there. So another name that came up, also before the someone before the time of social media, and you know, something happened to you, you could just tweet about it and stuff. This woman, Maya Angelou, is another name that came up. So and I have read all her books, and the stuff that she went through was insane.
Like, yeah,
a person to still rise up out of that is amazing, I think.
So that's the thing. So with Maya Angelou, again, she ticks more of my boxes, being that sort of that artistic feminist, so to speak, and coming from the artistic background. Yeah, I feel that, and I feel that pain that she went through, and you think all power to her. So again, you know, when I was talking about we were talking about Rihanna just now, it's for me, like, she ticks more of my boxes, having that artistic background. But yeah, for me to be able to do that without the presence of social media and become that icon, I think in today's day and age, social media, the public's very quick to make icons out of people. You know, you're going to see the lace collar everywhere on everybody in the next few weeks in homage to RBG. But are they going to actually remember? Are those people going to remember her? But her real fans will. Her real fans always will. And that you know, the diehard fans will always credit her for the work that she's done and achieved. She's not a two minute.
No, she's not.
No, she's not there for just 2 minutes. But I do worry about role models now compared to these heavyweight role models who achieved what they did without the internet, without social media, without things in place. They had to really fight their way through to make things happen, to make their voice heard, to make change for women around them and themselves. And I think those, for me, the true feminist icons, I still use that word sparingly, feminist role models for me. I'd still say role model. So those are. So Maya Angelou definitely is one of them. And I mean, you are, I think when we spoke initially, you said to me, who's your feminist icon? And I was like, really? I don't know. I don't have one. I don't know if I have an icon other than my grandma. I don't know if I have like a one person that I could say she's my feminist icon. I want to be like her, because there's so many women I want to be like, but there's so many men I want to be like too. So that's, you know, it's not just about being a woman. You can identify with men too. But
in terms of your grandma, though, your Nani Ji, yeah, like, you know, there's obviously something special about her, which makes you say she was my feminist role model, my feminist icon out of everybody. So just tell me a little bit about her.
So my Nani Ji, so this is my mum's mum. She passed away a few years ago, just 3 years ago. And I grew up with her. She was born in India. She was the only one of my grandparents that lived through partition. She was there in partition. The rest of them had left for East Africa, including her own husband, to work on the railway. You know, my grandfather had gone to work in the railways in East Africa. So she was there, and she got sent to her mum and dad's place, where she was regarded as a tomboy. She was the youngest sister, and she had, you know, three brothers and two sisters, and they kind of paired up, actually. So the youngest brother and sister were like in cahoots with each other, but she'd go out, she was a bit of a tomboy, she'd go out into the village with her gitban, her sword, and guard the village at night, even though she had a daughter and another daughter on the way at that time. So, you know, she saw everything. She was fearless, like literally she lived her faith fearlessly, but she lived it honestly. You know, she wanted to protect her whole village, be they Hindu, Sikh, Muslim, whatever they were. But it was a difficult thing to see. And I've only seen her, she only spoke to me once about the atrocities that she saw. But she soon from there went to Kenya, and from Kenya, I mean, she came from a very wealthy background, and her dad, so there was the casteism in society. So she wasn't from a Jat family. She was what's called from the Khan or Ramgriya family. But her father fought to be a landowner. Okay. So to break the caste system. Because, again, as Sikh didn't believe in caste. You know, if you really, truly believed in your religion, didn't believe in caste. And he fought to own his own land. He didn't care what people said about caste. So he did that. And I do think that he was a role model for her. So having done that, they went to East Africa. And she, again, being from a wealthy family, she married into a very poor family, poor but religious family. And so there were lots of issues growing up. And I didn't learn so much about, I didn't know so much about my grand's background, my grandparents' background, in terms of how poor they were, until her death. And it was an absolute shocker, because, you know, it's my grandfather being quite true to Sikhi, again, equality, honesty, one of his big things, and he didn't like people cheating at the Gurdwara, he didn't like dishonesty in jobs, he was very whatever, and he'd speak out. And if you spoke out, you got sacked, basically. So he'd just be in and out of jobs for a while. And my gran being, she was a mother of nine. They lived in a house which was kind of borrowed, literally, with two rooms. But everybody came to that house. Everybody was fed. Everybody grew up happy. They had no idea of how poor they were. And they never felt poor. And that's why I've never had that sense of how poor they were, because they were always happy. They'd go to the park every Sunday. My grandfather would cook. She was uneducated. Despite being from a wealthy family, My grandfather taught her to read and write. He taught her her music. He taught her to cook. She learned to sew there herself. And as a measuring tape, my grandfather had made a measuring tape of rope, which he'd marked out measurements on for her. And she used that to measure fabric. And she used that to make suits for women and clothes for women.
Yeah.
In Kenya, they'd all come to her. She'd make it with the help of her daughters and stuff as well. And that was your steady income. So she was really entrepreneurial. She, and, you know, when her father-in-law was wanted to, like, her father-in-law had a go at, wanted to have a go at her husband, my grandfather. She went to her father-in-law and said, "Do not say anything to my husband. He is my husband, and we will manage, however we will manage, with or without your help." To be able to say that and do that to your father-in-law in that era was a big thing. And it was my grandfather's cousin who was telling us this at her funeral. And it was like, it was a massive eye opener. And when I speak to my uncles and aunties and I speak to my mum, it's like, we never felt we were poor. We never, because we always felt loved. We always, every Sunday went to the park, the cousins came over, and they were all had big families at that time. So, you know, my grandfather was one of six or seven. They all had, most of them had six or seven kids. One of my grandfather's sisters had passed away. Their kids used to come over as well. And never once did they think, oh my God, we, you know, we've got nine of our own kids to feed. We've got that kind of thing. So while it was still very traditional, she was very forward-thinking, entrepreneurial, and I thought, you know, in her mindset, there was nothing you couldn't do, that she'd find a way to do it.
So she sounds awesome.
She was pretty awesome. I mean, but again, as a woman, I don't think she was perfect. Every person has flaws.
But no one is perfect.
This is the thing.
But this is the thing. It's like, if you want to hold somebody up and look at them and be like, I'm inspired by this person, you know, you don't think that they're a saint. You have to stop thinking people are saints, because we are all human beings, and nobody is without, you know, negative sides. So. And you shouldn't expect anyone to be perfect. And the thing is, unless someone dies and it comes out that they were like a Jimmy Savile level sicko, then...
Just let it be.
Let it be. Do you know what I mean?
Just let it be.
It's like they were a human being. What do you expect? They're not going to be perfect.
And even with RBG, if you look online, you know, some people be like, well, she did this and she fought for this and that wasn't true and that wasn't right. And it's like, do you know something? She can't win every case, or she's not going to agree with everything. She fought cases where she regretted her decision sometimes. You know, she held her hands up and said, you know, I regret this decision. And then she tried to do whatever she could later on, if she could, to make things right. But no one's perfect. And I do find, this is why I get scared when people put people up on a pedestal very quickly with the internet and social media especially. And then just so quickly you see them being knocked down.
Exactly.
But, yeah. And that's what's scary. And I just think women that stand the test of time are the real role models. But the thing is, even so, when things come out, you know, you knock them. But I just don't think you should knock people for their shortcomings. Just focus on the good. And that's what it's about. I get scared. I really do get scared about... how quick we are to put people up there. And sometimes some of the role models, I expect some people, I mean, if you were to ask a younger group of girls, maybe, who their feminist icons are, I'm pretty sure Kim Kardashian would come up.
Probably, yep.
You'd get loads of influencers that would come up. You'd get loads of people.
Even with Kim Kardashian, right, you know, I'm not saying she's a feminist icon. However, in a way, like, this is the thing about people not being perfect and the reason why she became famous in the first place. And I would never, I'm not going to slate her. You know, I don't agree with a lot of things and full frontal nudes and things. I'm not into. I don't think that's the only way to show up my body, right? However, if you look at the development of what she has like then stood up for and spoken up about, you know, I'm moving into like, trying to be a voice for people who are incarcerated and shouldn't be, and do you know what I mean? It's like, okay,
she's using a platform for the right things, right?
Yeah, and you've got to respect that. whether you agree with everything she did or not. You, I think that that should be respected. But another woman who, in this group chat thing, right, I put this name out, and I don't know what you think about it, right? So I'm not saying this is my feminist icon, but I was like, what about Margaret Thatcher, right? And they were like, no, like, literally, like, somebody shot me down, no. But I'm just going to say out here, right, so she was a politician, right, and she's going to be polarising because she's a politician, and I don't agree with a lot of her policies, but she made it seem normal for me and other girls like me that the Prime Minister was a woman. She made that seem normal. I thought that was a normal thing.
Until 1990, I think all our lives, you and I, only knew a female Prime Minister, right? That was normal.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then in India at the same time, it was Indira Gandhi.
Indira Gandhi, yeah.
So I thought that was normal. I grew up thinking, you know, that, okay, no big deal. Yeah, that's cool. This is what women can be prime ministers, and that's completely normal. And whether you know, both those women, there's a lot of negativity about them. I don't really want to get into all the policies and exactly what happened.
Not the politics side of it.
Just the fact that...
The drive.
That drive. And, you know, some might say, with Margaret Thatcher, she wasn't a woman's woman. She wasn't a feminist. She didn't make things better for women. You know, she did normalize female success in a very male dominated world, politics.
But does that for you make her an icon or not? Is she a feminist icon or is she an icon?
No, not really, but
that's the difference, right? There's so many, this is why I found it so hard to find these, a feminist icon, which for me wasn't like sort of so harsh or cutting in some way. Because I'm quite a soft person in many ways, like, you know, and it's for me, I wouldn't say I'm a girly girl, but I'd say I'm feminine in many ways. You know, I'm not the kind of girl, as you probably know, that sits there discussing lipstick colours or, you know what I'm like. You've known me. So that's not the kind of stuff I generally discuss. I'm not a girly girl, but I do want to put that lipstick on, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's nothing wrong with me wanting to wear that lipstick and not wanting to discuss it. So in that same way, I feel quite rounded as a person to say that feminism doesn't have to be that you have to talk things to their death before you achieve something. For me, it's a case of go out there and do it. But you don't need to do it with intent, though. You don't need to. This is the thing with lots of these women. They haven't necessarily gone out there and done it with the intent that I want to be a feminist icon. And I think this is where we're going. I think society sometimes is going wrong right now because of the amount of fame. You can, if famous for 5 minutes, you can get really, that can happen really quickly. People go out there to be a role model. I want to be a feminine icon.
I want to be an influencer. This is the thing now.
Exactly.
Respect to people who say, I'm an influencer. This is my thing. This is one of the things I do. And there's, you know, I know people who are like, if I say, what do you do for a living? Oh, I do this and I'm an influencer. I would never say I am an influencer. I wouldn't dare call myself an influencer. I can't even influence my own children to go and brush their teeth on time. I can't, you know what I mean? What influence am I going to have? But, so I find it that very strange. But it is a thing now, like, oh, I'm an influencer.
To buy stuff.
Because, you know, you've to buy stuff, yeah.
Because you do stuff in a funny way, or you say...
Because some of it's nice, you know, some of it is like body positivity influencing. You put your videos out there and stuff and, you know, show women it's okay to be a certain way or...
But is that somebody that anybody can... Well, the thing is, is that something that anybody can do, though?
It is really, technically, you can do it. You can get your phone or your laptop and do it and talk about with what you want to talk about and be an influencer, in quotation marks, if you want to be an influencer. Do you get what I mean? But it's what you were saying. It's like anyone can go and be like, oh, I'm going to influence people and, you know, this is what I like to wear. This is how I go about being positive in my day. Great things, but... as we're discussing, it takes a little bit more than that. And then these women that we've talked about never knew anything about the word, I'm an influencer or whatever. Yeah. And they were just doing it
They did doing it out it, of going through the struggle. Seeing a need for it. They needed it. They needed it to happen. They needed to see the change because they wanted to better their own lives. Through bettering their own lives, to better the lives of people around them. They weren't thinking about becoming Nobel Peace Prize winners or receiving awards or, you know, having huge accolades behind their names.
Yeah.
They weren't thinking about that. They were just doing what they did.
And what they felt passionately about.
Yeah. Yeah.
So another a few more names, right? So Marilyn Monroe came up.
Okay.
Which I was a bit like, okay, I would have never said Marilyn Monroe is a feminist.
But you can see for some people she would be. Like I said, you know, I think it depends on your own mindset and your own background and where you're coming from before you can understand why somebody chooses somebody as a role model or as an icon. I keep saying role model, but as an icon, you know, because that's what we're talking about, feminist icons. Who wouldn't? Which woman wouldn't want to be as glamorous as Marilyn Monroe, right?
And in a time, I guess, when everybody was like, you know, trying to be look a certain way, she was came out there curvaceous and stuff, set a new trend. So yeah. And also Malala Yousafzai came up as well. Her name. Now, some people might disagree with that, but if you look at her story, you know, from a very young age, she did actually have that belief of, I want to be educated and I want other girls to be educated. And, you know, I've got a book, like a kid's book that I've read to my kids about her. And they were like, oh, wow, you know, they took it for granted. Okay, we go to school, we're allowed to do all this and be equal. So they were like, okay, this is a girl who really wants to succeed, yet they're not supposed to be learning, supposed to be studying and stuff. So I think that was, you know, for my kids, because they're young girls, that was actually quite inspirational for them, you know, that drive to for education and to succeed in that. And then Rosa Parks came up.
Yeah.
Which would expect.
I would expect. Yeah, I see. I would expect a lot of those women to come up. And I'm just looking at some of the lists that I've got as well. But, you know, my list isn't, to be honest, very long. But it's like glimpses of women that I, things about women that I love, that certain parts of them, because I always feel like I can't claim to know everybody whole. You don't know what people are like. Just like, you know, we talk about people being like, we talk about Steve Jobs. He was great at what he did, but his personal life was very different. You know, everyone's got two sides to them, and you're not always lucky enough to see all of them. Like Michelle Obama, I think she's a great feminist icon, but she's not out there going, I want to be a feminist. She's out there doing the stuff that she believes in. She supported her husband. Some would see that as being subservient, right? She was second fiddle to her husband, but just because of the way she supported her husband and things, she supported him by doing what she needed to do for herself and helping him too.
And have you read Becoming? Have you read it?
No, I watched her webinar, and I was supposed to go to a talk that she was giving here at the Barbican, which I couldn't go to in the end. But she arguably has become a bigger figure than Obama himself.
Absolutely. This is the thing, because I read the book, right? And in the book, you really get a sense of how she didn't really want to go on that journey of, you know, so going around, supporting her husband at all these rallies and stuff. She didn't want any of it. She just wanted to be a mom, do her job. She was already successful anyway.
Yeah.
She was
successful in her own right.
She was successful in her own right. She was a successful lawyer, very, very clever, smart woman. But I think she, supporting her husband and going along with it, I don't know, yes, I might be like, it's a subservient, but look how she came out. You're so right. Now it's like, okay, Obama's doing his thing. We don't know what his thing is, but we know what Michelle Obama's doing.
Right, exactly. But the thing is, there's nothing, this is what I mean. Feminism isn't about doing all of that. It's about, you know, there's nothing wrong with supporting your husband. It doesn't mean you're being any less of a woman, but at the same time, she's managed to, you know, you respect her for having a career, for supporting a husband, still, I think what you admire her for bringing up young girls who seem to be fairly normal. They seem to have, I mean, because obviously we don't know them personally, but from what we see, they seem to have a fairly normal life They seem to be down to earth. And it's kind of everybody's ideal dream life. And I think that's why you look up to her. But the thing is, you look up to her, she's not trying to rub people up the wrong way. She's not picking fights. She's not doing anything like that. You know, standing up doesn't mean you have to stick your oar in and make your point every 2 minutes. There's a way of making it. And I think the way she makes her points is very articulate, and she does it with sophistication.
She exudes dignity. I think their whole family, the whole entire time they were in that White House and afterwards, they just exude dignity.
Absolutely. And that's why so many people hold them in high regard. And I wouldn't call her a feminist icon. I just think she's an all-round icon. Mm. I think she's an icon for men as well. Why wouldn't she be? And this is the thing. We don't need to categorise things into feminist and icons necessarily, because why wouldn't she be an icon for men too? And why wouldn't RBG be an icon for men as well? Who, you know, who wouldn't want to achieve what they've achieved?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, so some more names here, right?
Go on.
I didn't know some of them, so I did my research. But Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who is an American politician, she serves as the U.S. representative for New York's 14th Congressional District.
Yeah.
So that includes like the Bronx and Queens and stuff.
Yes.
So her, somebody said that that's a feminist icon for them. Dr. Shola Mosh, let me say this properly. Dr. Shola Mos Shabambimu. Shola Mos Shogbambinu. She's another powerhouse. I really hope that's how I say her name. She's another powerhouse that was mentioned. And she is a New York attorney and solicitor of England and Wales. And she's got loads of experience in the financial services. She's a writer, public speaker, political commentator, featured in mainstream and online media. She's a political and women's rights activist. She basically is a very, very strong personality. I watched one of her TED Talks yesterday. Mm. So she's awesome as well. Some of the other people, Sheryl Sandberg, the chief operating officer of Facebook,
yes.
founder of Leading Org and a philanthropist as well. So she was the first woman to serve on Facebook's board of directors. Megan Rapinoe, an American soccer player. She was Sports Illustrated Sportsperson of the Year last year. And she's just the fourth woman in its 66-year history to win it, unaccompanied by anyone else.
Where are the sportswomen? Where are all the sports icons, the feminine sports icons in all of this?
Well, do you know what? I'm going to play you another voice note now on the subject of sportswomen. So this is a voice note from actress and fitness guru, Parveen.
Hi, Reena. It's me, Parveen Byron. And in terms of a female figure, it is difficult because there's many things and aspects that you look at in a woman. And I think predominantly, it sounds a cliche, but my mum is definitely one of my biggest inspirations. And I think the most integral part about her is that her resilience and her attitude towards other people around her. And for many years, I've watched and observed and just seen how amazingly, seepingly her emotions have never got the better of her. You know, she's always able to override a situation in the most civil manner, you could call it, respectful. And extremely humble. You know, she's never been self-obsessed or selfish in any way, shape or form. So she's always kind of looked out for being the best and getting the best out of other people. So I believe I kind of see her definitely as one of my greatest inspirations as a woman. Another person who's actually a public figure, and that is Serena Williams, the tennis player. So she is a world champion, but alongside all those things, it's not because of that she's empowering and inspirational. I think more so it's her attitude towards being right. Sorry, it's her attitude towards actually being able to fight for female equality as an athlete. So, you know, she's a female, she's a woman, she's a mother, she's a sister. You know, she's a pioneer. She is a public figure. And, She has a lot of expectations as well that she has to meet within her job role. So there's a lot of things that she carries on her shoulders. But each time she does even enter a tournament, she's constantly thinking positively. She's extremely faithful. And she's a face for many people, women especially.
So, Serena Williams.
Yeah, I would have expected to see her come up sooner. For me, I'd put on my list Dame Kelly Holmes. For me, having worked alongside athletes for a few years and seeing how much goes into being an athlete and the mindset, the determination, the drive you need to do that, for her and other athletes to achieve what they do at the level that they do and then be seen to do everything else that they do as well. So especially with female athletes, when they're mothers as well, and they have, you know, how that affects their body, how it affects their career sometimes as well, because obviously it's sport. And yes, sports people, their career is obviously, you know, has a shorter span.
Yeah.
But what they do, I mean, Serena Williams, she's punching way above her weight in terms of people would have expected her to retire ages ago from professional tennis. And she's still there. She's still a powerhouse. It's still about her. But the thing is, a lot of it is about her mindset and about her drive. And I think she's absolutely amazing. For me, she's a great role model. And I love watching her videos with her daughter that she does as well. So, you know, she's doing all of that. And to keep fit as she does, as an athlete, as a sportswoman, it just, you know, I think she's pretty awesome. Sports, I think for me, all athletes, all people in sports, the mindset that they have to want to succeed and achieve is just, you know, way above what so many would think. You have to watch what you eat, how you train, when you train. You know, you can't have a day off.
It's more mental. It's not just like you get out there, run or whatever, because the mind is the thing that controls everything and pushes you when you don't want to push yourself.
That mental strength that you need to do all of that, and then on top of that to be doing everything else, it's something that I you know, bow down to loads of athletes. Having watched them, I've sat in my office and watched people in sort of outside my office, athletes sitting in like ice tubs and barrels in front of me. And this is when I was working at a university which is well known for sport, and lots of you know, Olympians come and train there, and lots of stuff's done there. And it was a privilege to watch people up close working that hard and what they go through mentally and physically. And yeah, so for me, sportswomen are definitely up there because they're breaking barriers in terms of sports, but also in terms of people's mindsets, what you can achieve. A mother doesn't stop you from being a sportswoman, a successful sportswoman at that. You don't have to stop your career just because you're a mother. You don't have to give up your life just because you're a female sports person. You're not just focused for the sportswomen that I see that are just not focused on just the sport.
Being a mom myself, I can honestly say that yes, it's a lot on your body and your mind to have children. The responsibility, you've got to think about them all the time, and you've got to get your body kind of back on track. You never go to sleep properly and all this kind of stuff. However, also it's one of the biggest motivators as well, because you have little eyes looking up at you, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you're their role model. Exactly. And so you think, okay, I have really got to push harder because I want to show them this is what you can do.
See, that's the thing. And I think that's why so many of us will say that our first inspiration, female inspiration, will be our mother or our grandmother, because it is what you see closer to home. And I think that's what's so important. It's what you see closer to home. And that's why for me, a lot of the role models and the people that I have around me are women that I might have worked with, women that have advised me on my journey. I mean, there's, I loved interviewing a lady called Polly Harar from the Sharon Project. The work that she does is absolutely amazing, and she gives the government advice on honour abuse, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And it refer, you know, she helps women get back into work, get away from those situations, but she also educates the authorities on what things mean. Things like we talked about, mentioned dowry earlier. It happens here in the UK still, yeah. And people are holding on to stuff, and she educates the authorities on what that means when things don't fall neatly within their laws. You know, she's like, well, this means this and that's wrong, you know. It's her that's going out to educate these people. She's helped so many women, and for me, she's a feminist, but she, you know, she's not against men, but she's a feminist, and she inspires change in mindset.
Who else is on your list?
There's a lady called Ren Kapoor. I don't know if you've heard of her. She's an entrepreneur. I think she got an MBE not so long ago, but she helps people, especially ex-military people, to set up businesses and helps them sort of grow their lives outside of their military career once they've left. And the work that she does is quite commendable and high profile in the sense of delivering back to community. Community is a very strong theme with me, so you can see that these people resonate with me,
yeah,
as well. So community and the arts are two very strong things that I feel strongly about. So people like her resonate with me. I also spoke to Parmi Dinsa not very long ago, and she campaigns for children who have disabilities, their rights, and she's taken it all the way across to the Commonwealth and everything, and she's doing global summits, and she's got a charter that companies are now signing up to, and we're talking about big companies as well, and she, you know, she's done that having her own son who had a disability, and she's got more than one child, but and he's been her strength to make sure these changes have happened, to make sure that her son's voice is heard. And those women, for me, even though they're not sort of, well, they're not the people that people pick up on social media and hold them up there, women wouldn't necessarily hold them up there as being like, yeah, she's an icon. I'm like, why not? Why aren't you?
And it doesn't have to be somebody who's just, you know, a public figure that everybody knows on social media, or somebody from, yeah, like back in the day, you know, respect to people like Rosa Parks and Jhansi Hirani and everybody. But there are women now who are in the process of making history. Like somebody that I wanted to talk about just briefly is Asma Khan. Now, you know.
Ooh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, because like, I just feel like the more I learn about her, the more I like her. Now, she was in my video for the poem Brown is Beautiful.
Yes.
So yeah, if you haven't seen that, do have a look at that. So I didn't really know much about her at the time. But since then, I've watched her episode of Chef's Table on Netflix. So watch that. You know, you just learn more about her and what she kind of stands for and stuff. So I really loved that. And now she, if you don't know, she's an Indian-born British chef and restaurateur and cookbook author. She owns Darjeeling Express Restaurant, which was in Soho, but it's now moving to Covent Garden,
yeah.
And she, in 2019, Business Insider named her as number one on their list of 100 coolest people in food and drink. I think she was on the Vogue Women to Watch, top 25 women to watch as well recently. But she's actually a trained lawyer with several degrees, including a PhD in British constitutional law from Oxford. Now, when she came to this country, when she was newly married, she couldn't even cook. And yet she's known for cooking, right? So she couldn't even cook. So she then went to learn from her family how to cook. started doing supper clubs, which got really popular.
Yeah.
She just seems really passionate about women's rights and doing things to make a difference. She set up a cafe in a refugee camp in northern Iraq, employing traumatized Yazidi women. And most Sundays, she's given over her restaurant for free to other novice female chefs to host their own supper club. She supports a non-profit organization called Second Daughters Fund, mm-hmm. which encourages families in India to celebrate their birth of the second daughter.
Yeah.
And by sending packages of sweet treats to them that they can share with neighbors and stuff. She's the second daughter herself, and she said that her mom actually cried about that. This is what she says on the documentary Chef's Table. And so, you know, I just feel like I love the fact that after she had kids, she changed her interests. You know, she changed direction. She made a success out of it. And she took other women with her along the way. And now I'm just kind of like, wow, you're doing something special.
So very similarly to that, Holly Willoughby, just recently, she's changed her agent. She set up her own agency. She's got a full female team around her now, and she wants to help bring women forward. You know, lots of people have that mindset, and I think in that way social media is good because it gives you ideas, it gives you, you know, it gives you chances to do these things that you couldn't dream of doing, because it's also a good place to put a call out, I need help with, mm-hmm. who can help me. But I do find that there are inspirational role models closer to home. None of them are all perfect. And I just feel scared to call anybody an icon. I think it's too easy to call somebody an icon these days. Everybody, what's in and out seems to be a thing of fashion at the moment. At one time, I did go back. And I looked through, you have top 10 lists of female global icons. Mm-hmm. And if you look at that list going back over the last 10 years, I mean, Sonia Gandhi was in it at one point. Aishwarya Rai was in it at one point. So, you know, the kind of women, Ellen DeGeneres was in it at one point. And at the moment, she's being hated.
Exactly.
Right? So, Michelle Obama, obviously, she's been a pretty constant in there. Maya has been a constant in there. You can see the patterns, and you can see the patterns when you look at this list over the years, to who stands the test of time, to who's fashionable in and out. But we're talking about the top 10 women globally, and there's so many women who are in business. So the names that we hear about, a flashlight, when we talk about RBG, you know, they're not in there for the social media element of it. They're not in there for the fame. They're not doing
it for the gram. They're doing it from the heart.
Yeah, and there was, I haven't written her name down, but there was also from India, there was, she worked for Pepsi. She was number 2 in Pepsi. And it was an Indian woman, and she was amazing. Again, I can't remember her name. This is what it just... This is what it means.
Somebody else suggested somebody from India as well. Sudha Murthy. She's an Indian engineering teacher, an author, and a social worker. And she is the chairperson of Infosys Foundation. So she's the wife of the co-founder of Infosys, N.R. Narayan Murthy. And she's also written numerous books on topics ranging from like love, social issues, and kids' books, you know, that have been translated into loads of languages. So she sounds awesome, really. But
there's some amazing women out there. And the thing is, just because they're not out there going, look at me, this is the difference. This is what I find really scary when we talked about this before. People aren't saying, look at me. And they're not calling. I have people saying, I don't know, with this podcast that you do, whether you have people calling you up and saying, I'm doing this, would you do this for me?
Mm-hmm.
Right? I have that, where I have people coming to me and say, well, you know, we're doing this at the moment, and it'd be really good if you could just push that a little bit. And I'm like, well, I don't believe in it. It's cringe, but it's like, just because you've got, like, you know, you might have a few £100,000 behind you and you've got X, Y, and Z supporting you. I'm sorry, but I just don't feel like it's genuine or it's good enough. And I've had people, artists at the radio station with my station manager say, well, you've got to interview this person. We've got this person for you today. And I'm like, well, I challenge him. Why am I interviewing this person? What's this person achieved? What's so special about them that I'm interviewing them? Wow, they've got a track out. Great. You know, recently somebody said to me, oh, this person's had 4 million views on their track. This is coming from my management at the station. And I'm going, well, that's fake. Because, you know, I said, how can you just go around just doing what people tell you to do? Because it makes you feel part of a clique or a gang or a elite circle. It's not true. It's not right. It's not fair. I want to support what I believe in or what I feel is true. And the thing is, I don't always have to like it. Mm. That's the thing. You will meet many a radio presenter who will have to play a track that they hate and pretend to like it on air, obviously. But in terms of good music as an artistic director, in terms of the work that I, you know, it's horrible to say to an artist, I don't feel I can support your work. Mm-hmm. It's not always about my artistic direction. Sometimes I just feel like it's flimsy, or it doesn't carry enough weight, or it doesn't carry enough meaning, or it doesn't reach out, or it's, dare I say it, superficial. That doesn't take away, you know, I don't always have to like the work that I might be supporting. I'm not a great follower of, let's say, the hip hop scene, right? I love music though, and I can't ignore it. I will listen to it, but it's not my chosen go-to. But there are bits of it, and I can see the value of it, and I can see. So it's understanding the value. So there's loads of, we've talked about so many feminine icons and role models today, and out of all of those, I don't agree. Like you just said, you don't agree. They're not your cup. You wouldn't do what they do. You wouldn't do it in the way they do. You don't necessarily agree with them. Same with me. But I do understand where they're coming from and what they're doing and the contribution they're making towards the feminist movement. And you can't ever take that away from them.
No, you've got to give credit where it's due.
Yeah.
Because it's not easy to do things. And a lot of people are like, wow, what's she doing? I could do this. But when you do it, it's anything worth doing is not easy, really. This is what I say. I always say to my kids as well. Most things in life that are worth doing are not easy.
Nothing's easy.
Got to their positions with a lot of struggle. So that's why I need, you know, we need to give credit.
Yeah. One woman that I want to mention is Adele. For me, in coming from the music world and the artist side of me, for me, she's a massive role model. You know, if she's gone out there, achieves a success against all odds. She had her operation on her throat, which she nearly lost her voice, but just came back stronger. She achieved her success as a curvy woman. She might have lost weight now. That's what she wanted to do. She didn't do it because she felt any pressure. She's just done things the way she's wanted to do them. And she's just down to earth and out there and herself. And she's chosen her own path. She's, the goal's there, but she's chosen her own path to that goal. How she's going to release music and what she's going to do when she does stuff. And she's just able to engage with people. And for me, she's a good role model for young women to still have as well. But again, that my perspective from the arts music side comes in there as well, knowing how difficult that journey is.
I just want to play you some voice notes now about just normal, non-famous women inspiring each other.
I feel like for me, I would say my family and friends are female icons in the sense that they are so hardworking and so courageous in everything that they do. I have a friend who's a scientist. I have a friend who's currently just applied to become a doctor. I have a friend who bought a house on her own. I have a friend who's a single mother who has literally also bought a house on her own. My mom is amazing. I think the women around me are incredible. I think it's so difficult to choose because I carefully, other than obviously family members, I carefully choose people who I think will add value to my life. And I would say my friends are so amazing and strong in every single thing that they do, that it'd be really hard for me to choose one person.
Hi, this is Sadhika from Brown and Feminist, and my feminist icons have been my friends and my family, the people that I surround myself with. I learn something new from them every day, or I'm inspired by them in a different way. I would even say my dad is a huge influence in my core values as a feminist. I wouldn't call him a feminist, but he's definitely played a role in shaping my inner strength, and so has my mum. They're both, I reckon, my biggest influence when it comes to going for your goals and believing in yourself and really striving for what you want.
So it's nice to hear that Sadhika also, she's she said her dad as well.
Yeah.
Which is really nice.
That's interesting, because I had, when I was thinking about this and I was talking about my grand earlier, I was thinking of bringing up my uncle, because he's a father to three daughters as well. And you've got two sisters, you're three as well. And I just think of him and how he is really supportive and encouraging of his three daughters. And, he tells them there's nothing that you can't do if you put the work in. And that, I think, is really important. I think it's really important for women to have the support of of their male counterparts, whether it be the brothers, their husbands, their fathers, their uncles, grandparents, whatever they are. But if you have that support, your mindset changes differently. You're not feeling that you're against. Because if you feel like your own male community around you is against you, then it's like you're fighting your own, and that's what maybe makes a lot of women who, talking from the South Asian community perspective, that you're fighting your own then. And when you're fighting your own, that's where your battle starts killing you, because you're disrespecting your own if you choose to stand up against your own, who aren't believing in the same things that you do. But when they do believe that their daughter, when their father believes that his daughter should be able to succeed in that field, why not? It's okay if she earns more than her husband, why not? It's okay if she wants to go and do this or be a mother at 40, that's okay, there's no problem. If they don't see a problem in it, then nobody else can criticise you for it.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, even my own dad, I think my dad, I know that he did want a son as well, I think he was just, he wanted us to kind of not be restricted and do what we wanted to do, achieve what we wanted to achieve, and he wanted us to just be the best at everything. Like, sometimes quite pushy, but
yeah,
it just supporting us as well. And even like with me, getting married to somebody who's non-Asian as well, he was supportive and like, come on and let's do a nice big wedding, invite people, there's no problem, and just I think that's a nice thing to have that on your side,
You don't need the support of the wider community, you need the support of the people around you, and which is why it's so important that the voice notes that we just heard, talk about their closest role models being their friends and their family. And I think for me, going back to myself, we talk and my beliefs and values. So in Sikhi, we talk about Sangat, which is your company. And it's the company you keep. And, I over the years, I've become really careful about keeping company with negative people.
Same.
Because negative people drain my energy, and that's how I feel. So I kind of have a line that I draw with negativity. Be they even family, sometimes if there's negativity, then it's just like, something, I'm not going to drain myself until you're ready to have a conversation about this, because I'm not saying I'm right and you're wrong. It's until we're ready to have a conversation,
yeah,
a healthy conversation about this, I'd rather not continue that conversation. Let's talk about something else. It's that kind of thing. But again, having people that drain your energy around you is something that stops you from moving forward.
I know, and I've got some messages to read out actually, and one of them it touches a little bit on that. So obviously lots of people have said that their moms are feminist icons to them. Now, this is a message from Amy Beeson, who was on the podcast a couple of weeks ago. She's a mom of two and an author as well. So this is what she said. From as early as I can remember, my mum told me I could do anything, that if I encountered a problem, why was it happening and what action I was going to take to solve it, that everything is fixable, that it's important to support things that take care of everyone's family, not just yours. She was giving me the power to face life's challenges. Which I think is really lovely, and that that must make you so strong to have that. Parveen earlier said her mom as well, and said that it's a cliche to say that your mom is your icon, but I think you're very lucky if you have that strong role model for a mother. It's not a cliche, it's a privilege. But also, I wanted to point out that some people grow up without any feminist icon to look up to. Yep. They may not have strong women in their family, or they've been exposed to, or they've not been exposed to women that can inspire them. But I believe that women have this inner strength where you can endure quite shitty situations and lots of things happening at the same time and come out stronger. So I'm just going to read out one last message. I haven't really had any role model figures growing up, which is strange, I know. I guess because I've always learnt by myself how I don't want to be by looking at what was and is around me, which is a load of people just going with the social norm, and that's always bored me. So I learnt how I want my life to be, and I have gone with that. Be it an outcast, the black sheep, I don't care, as long as whatever I do makes me happy. So I think I'm my own badass woman, maybe. I think she is, by the sounds of it. Good on you. I know.
No, that's, I think that's really, really important. And I feel, I've got to say, I identify with that message a lot, because coming from a really traditional family and being the eldest, it's always kind of been on me to be the role model to the rest. But then I'm not what people necessarily want me to be in the family. Yes, I am all the good things, you know, I am a good girl, a good, you know, traditional, all that kind of thing. But there's ways that I'm different that they find hard to accept, where I feel like the guys should be treated equally to the girls, where if you're saying to the girls, go and, you know, after family gathering, the girls get to go to the kitchen and clean up after everybody, whereas I used to be, guys, get up, you're coming to the kitchen with me. And their mums would be like, she just asked the boys to wash up.
And I'm like, damn right they should.
Yeah, so just silly things like that, where, you know, that's kind of frowned on, as in, you know, that's not right, there's enough girls to do it. Well, there's enough boys to do it too. It's not fair. You know, there's certain things like that where I'd be different, and I'd be like, it's okay, go and do that, or I support you, go and do it. And I'd say to the kids, like it doesn't matter if your parents don't support you, I'm always here to support you. And that just, I'm not encouraging them to do anything bad, because I would be the first person that would also kill them if they did anything bad, or the first person to say, before this gets to your parents, you best stop. You know, I'm still that person to them too. But at the same time, explore within certain safe boundaries what you can and can't do, what you can achieve. If you need support, I'll help you. I'll push you. If there's any way I can help you, I'll help you. I think that's so important to have. But I think I was looked down on sometimes for being that person, but I found things have changed, because being the eldest, my youngest cousins are only just going off to uni now, some of them, so that whole thing's changed, whereas I was fighting for it for myself and coming up with barriers. Now they're being like, push, no, go and do that. And I was like, I wish you'd had that mindset when it was me 20 years ago. But then, instead of me sitting here saying I wish, well, just because it's 20 years later, just because I'm now 40 something, it does not mean I can't do it.
Exactly.
I can't sit there and go, well, you know, just because I didn't do it 20 years ago, I can't do it now. I can. It might be a bit harder and I might want to do stuff. Well, if I still want to do it, I can do it. And maybe I will, maybe I won't. It just depends on what I feel like doing right now. But you can't say you can't. And it's when people tell you you can't do things around you, I think that's the thing, that's the worst thing you can have around you. And so I'd just say to all women out there, as long as you believe that you can, don't let anyone else tell you that you can't.
I agree with that. And also, I just want to add, lastly, that sometimes if you want to speak out about things, you know, and you have every right to do so, which you have to keep doing, you're going to piss some people off. You're going to piss some people. You can't please everybody. When you believe in your heart what is right, you have to expect that.
And I say this, but this is just life in general. You're never going to please anybody. It's part of life. And as soon as you can accept that as part of life, you just learn to laugh it off. If there's somebody that you want to like you that doesn't, understand why you want them to like you and see what that issue there is. Because you might want them to like you for a wrong reason. Or there might be an icon of yours, somebody that you look up to and you believe in. And you think, well, maybe you're doing something wrong. Or maybe you need to go to them for some advice. Or maybe they're just not the person you thought they were. Be careful who you choose as your role models. Be careful why you're choosing them as your role models. Know why you're choosing them. Don't just follow the crowd with popularism and what's in fashion and what's not in fashion. Be careful who you choose as your role models, and if you want to, you can. Don't put yourself down. Mm-hmm. Don't be hard on yourself, and don't look for obstacles. Just look for ways through, over, around them.
Mm. Well, thanks so much, Gidded, for coming on the Sisterhood of Mommy Imperfect. I feel like we could carry on forever, but we won't for now. But everybody, thank you for listening, and let me know your thoughts about feminist icons. Get in touch on mommyimperfect@gmail.com or follow me on Instagram, which is @RinaAnnabelle, or Twitter @RinaDeepthi, or follow the Mommy Imperfect Facebook page. Until next week, from me and Gidith, it's goodbye. Stay well and keep being the boss lady that you are. Bye.
Bye.